You're listening to Red Setter, your roundup of Red Camera news from the crew at fxguide.com.
Hi, and welcome to episode 13 of Red Setter. I'm not actually at all superstitious, Jason, are you?
No.
I have no belief that my destiny is either determined by numerology or, for that matter, the idea that 1/12 of the population is all going to have a bad Thursday because the horoscope says so.
Now, I'm the most sceptical person you'll meet, apart from yourself, probably.
Yeah. Which is also why I don't gamble in Vegas. I understand it's a good form of entertainment. I just understand the odds. But, hey, that's slightly off topic. We're here for Red Center, and Jason, we're back together in the same location, which is kind of nice, because last time we spoke, I was in Chicago, fairly hungover, fairly been to the Cubs game. It was, I think it was first thing in the morning, and it was like midnight for you, right?
Yes, it always makes for an interesting podcast when one of us is in a completely different time zone, or hungover, or slightly pissed, or...
And I think in that podcast I made some slightly cryptic remark about a comparison between whether or not people were interested or looking forward to having red stuff happening on Avid versus on After Effects. And a couple of people interpreted this because they obviously were paying attention. That I had a strong opinion.
The and two listeners.
No, that's not true, Jason. Don't be like that. That is far be it from the truth. In fact, I guess you have to understand, guys, that sometimes when we're talking, one will make a comment that's not exactly what you'd be as precise as if you were writing the written word for a story. But yes, I think the inclusion of the stuff in After Effects is really important, and we're going to get to that because I'm going to discuss the video that's out on the net. But first, let's go to the news desk. And what's happening in the news, Jace?
Well, cranking out the cameras up to 2400 to 2650, so it's getting through the list. Red drives is probably one of the critical things, because a lot of people are getting cameras who just can't get drives. So it does look like they're starting to get those out the door, and they're going to catch up and be back, clear all their back orders by the end of this month, end of August. So hopefully you'll be able to click on the store and order a drive without having to wait, which is pretty, I'm sure that'd be a bit of a blow if you can get your hand, finally get your hands on a red one, and then all you can do is record off CF.
Yes, that's true. But still, I mean, it's, you know, it's obviously, I guess we're going to discuss this later. We're going to discuss Scarlett in this episode, so I'll hang off on my production pipeline comments until then. Sure. And also, coming up is IBC, right, in September?
Yeah, have you ever been to IBC? I never have.
Obviously. I have been to IBC, and it used to be IBC in Montreux in Europe, but John Montgomery from FX Guide normally covers Amsterdam for us. He goes over to Paris and hangs out and then goes over to Amsterdam. I'm not saying it's easier for him to go from Chicago to Europe. I just think he just loves Europe so much that he always puts his hand up for that, and I welcome it, because having just come back from SIDGRAPH, I'm far too exhausted to possibly jump on another plane and fly to the other side of the planet.
Sure. Well, if you are going to IBC, you can go pop into the Red Lounge. Red will be there, and guests to the Red Lounge will be able to view Red One, obviously, as well as models of Epic, Scarlet, Red Ray, all of the stuff that was at NAB. Maybe different, maybe some new updated prototypes, perhaps.
Well, if we think about last year's IBC, that's when they first showed footage of the Red One, if you remember.
Wow.
That was is that right?
Ago.
No, a year and a half. Must be 2 years ago.
Must be.
Yeah, must be 2 years ago, because a year ago they were shipping.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was 2 years ago they showed it. It was after NAB, and they showed the first stuff from the sensor, and it was that shot of the car and the girl's skull and the milk. And,
yeah.
And stuff, yeah.
Cool.
So,
yep, you can go there. There's content theatre. So, actually, there's, I think, pretty much still up on red.com. They're calling for entries for this if you want to submit some footage to be screened at the content theatre.
Oh, really? I've been asked to do that, and I've just haven't got around to posting it. I should definitely do that.
Yeah, so if you shot some stuff, obviously, particularly if it's in high res, 4K, 2K, whatever you've got, they're looking for footage to screen during that. And obviously, it's free to go to the Red Lounge. There'll be drinks and Wi-Fi, and Ted will be there. So yeah, if you're in there, should be dropping in.
So just when we thought it was safe to go back into the builds, build 16 is in production and people are using it, of course. But build 17 is now looming on our horizon.
Yeah, it's pretty minor upgrades, but still obviously some good little fixes there. The first one, which is slightly confusing, which I had to sort of dig a little bit deeper on this one, is the addition of 4K HD mode, which is kind of like, I think someone likened it to selling shirt as small, large.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Now, yes, I mean, the term HD is used and abused widely. So what does it actually mean?
Well, from what I understand, it's a setting that basically lets you, once you scale it out, I think you can basically, if you choose the H proxy, it just gives you basically 1080p files. I'm not sure what they are at the moment, but if you shoot 4K...
Well, it's 4K, 2K, 1K, and so it's not actually, you know, they're natural divisions because of the wavelet stuff. So we're keen to see what that does and how that actually works, actually. Because I was under the understanding that they weren't able to easily produce an HD resolution version of the QuickTime wrapper, that was actually... more complex, so I don't know how they cracked it.
It's not quite 4K, it's a little bit sort of between 4K and 3K, but essentially...
Oh, I see what they're doing. I know what they've done. Hang on.
It's multiple... It's I know what four times HD.
Yeah, so what they're doing is... okay, that makes perfect sense. What they're doing is they've... So the reason that you get 4K to 2K to 1K is you just divide down the native resolution. So by offering a different native resolution, what they've sort of reversed it. They've said you need to shoot 4K in double. So when we give you a natural wavelet half, it happens to fall back to 1920 by 1080. So by generating it at, say, 2160, then when they do the natural division by two for the wavelet technology, you just happen to get 1080 at the other end.
Yeah.
So I see what they're doing, yeah.
Yeah, so it just means you get HD files you can just drop. If you want to cut, this is primarily if you want to just cut straight from proxy.
Well, if you were interested in doing a commercials application, that would be the format to shoot in because, you know, you're going to get on the timeline in, say, Final Cut, you're going to get 1920 by 1080. That's actually a very clever idea. I don't know why I didn't think of that.
Okay. The other thing, which I didn't even know you could actually do, is embedded audio coming out of the HD SDI ports.
Yeah, which is pretty significant, actually, if you're doing what we were doing on set and wanting to have... playback, because we actually had to rig up a weird system of getting audio coming from the mixing desk and feeding back over just so we could do playback off what we were sampling, because we were running LUTs on the footage that was coming off the red camera, and of course we wanted to have those LUTs just able to be played back for the director.
Yeah.
And but without audio, you know, it's hard to judge performance. So
how do you get the audio out? How do you get the audio out of the other end then, if you've got HD SDI?
Well, you can have embedded audio in HD SDI.
Yeah, but what are you plugging that SDI input into?
Well, then you've got some kind of box that's sitting on your Mac, whatever, that's taking in the HD SDI and decoding the audio and just then producing... And then that's just coming in like an HD feed as if it's coming off a standard internal router.
That actually could be cool on set if someone can work out the simple breakout box method, because it's a lot of pain, obviously, on set getting audio to the video split land. Well, you have to have a transmitter, you know, put a little Comtex on the camera. Another thing hanging off the camera.
But this, aren't you talking about getting audio back into the camera?
I'm just talking about audio to audio into the camera. That's true. No, but also audio to the video split when we're recording.
Right.
In Video Village.
Well, okay, but if you didn't put your breakout box, if you didn't down convert on the camera, but down converted back over at the side, then presumably you could do a breakout at the Video Village, and that would give you the audio, and that would solve that problem.
Mm. Well, what else?
Well, 16 gigs, of course.
Yep. Well, full support for 16 gigs, which I thought was there anyway. But the main thing is full support of the Red RAM drive, which is obviously still on the way.
I don't want to know is this other one? Yes, it's true. Coming to a theatre near you soon. Hey, what I don't know is why they keep on bouncing between ASA and ISO as the name of the sensitivity parameter.
Like, Chris,
I want somebody to write in and explain to me. I mean, I know the International Standards Organization, I know the ASA was the original, but what's the significance of suddenly changing back from ISO to ASA? I mean, I just used them interchangeably, and I just trained myself to say ISO after years of saying ASA. Now I have to go back.
Well, they should just make it a setting, a parameter in the menu, deep in the menu. What do you want to call it? What do you want me to tell you it as?
Yeah, call it the exactly. Yeah. So, okay, I don't understand the significance of that. I am ignorant.
Yeah, no, who knows?
There's some other name changes as well, but that's not what's got my afterburners set alight. And by the way, having just watched an episode of MythBusters, I actually understand what afterburners do. And so igniting the fuel in my spent exhaust is the audio pins and iPins upgrade program. Yeah. That's the one that's got me fired up.
That sounds fascinating. I know you're very keen, as is probably most of the
bloody hell am I ever
effects community. So basically, for no charge. Again, remember all this sort of shit. I mean, I think this is it just blows me away that the aftermarket stuff that Red's doing. No charge. So basically, including the shipping, they'll pick up, get your camera picked up, fit the eye pins, and also do an audio full audio board swap over, changing the audio board in the camera.
So this lends credence to my theory, which is only a theory, don't quote me as this being fact, is the problem with the eye pins was that there was an earth-type problem that was leading to a fault in the audio. In other words, there was some kind of interference going into the audio from the eye pins. So they took the eye pins out of the front of the mounting of the bracket for the where the actual lens hooks in,
right,
the PL mount, and by removing that solved the audio problem. So if you were to put the pins back in and you didn't fix the audio board, you'd reintroduce the same problem. I think that's my theory. I could be wrong.
But in the process, they've obviously, I guess, moved on to some next-generation circuitry in the audio department, because basically they're saying it's going to be vastly, vastly superior audio encoding and audio processing.
Yeah, there are a couple of limitations with the way it is at the moment, and I must admit, I think this is great. I mean, this is really great, but I just don't care about the audio nearly as much as I care about it opening up to doing lens type calibrated data flow into the metadata stream, because one of the great luxuries of the Red camera is the fact that you can stream metadata into the image flow in real time without any penalty. At the moment, we've not seen a lot of that. We've seen some metadata obviously going into the flow, but it tends to be clip based, not frame based, and this opens the door for frame based metadata. And at frame based metadata at up to 100 frames a second, at least it was last time I checked, means we're going to be able to do amazing stuff. And this is the carrot to the rod of rolling shutter. In other words, we in the effects community hate the rolling shutter, but this the carrot to get over it is the idea that the lens would actually log at every point in time exactly what the lens is at in terms of zoom, focus length, exposure, everything else that you want for obviously doing things like 3D tracking that otherwise do unfortunately get screwed up by the rolling shutter.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll...
I mean, I'm just going to say right now, thank you. Like this, honestly, I'd really got to the point that I was in sort of, as Australians would say, shit scared that we're going to lose this altogether. So I mean, heartfelt thanks to the Red team for keeping this up, because I'm sure that this isn't yet a major point for most people, but it will be. Once this works, it will be. And Jace, the reason I say this is we can do this now, but it requires me to get in the face of the camera department and say, can I put a external box on the side with a little memory card and
right.
make sure that's running whenever you're running, and there's a wire going back from the lens to that, and I just don't feel comfortable hitting your camera department and asking them to do that.
So this data, is that critical to you that obviously you'd go through all that?
Well, no, see, I don't, see, I would, except for I don't want to be in the face of a normal 35mm camera department in requiring them to do all that unless they had a bloody good reason. Whereas now, you know, you'd say, do you have all the data you need? And I'd glance at the thing and realize that it's an iTech-enabled lens on there, which we'd probably discuss in pre-production, and just nod and say, yep, no problem, all good.
Yeah.
Not have to talk to anyone, not require them to flick any switches, not do anything special. It's just there.
Yeah.
Later in 3D, a month and a half later, when we can't remember what lens we were on for that, we're trying to match in and remove curvature of the lens to get the 3D to sit in, just press a button. Oh, you're on a 35.3 length of the zoom between the 25 and the 85, and yep, that and the focus was out at blah blah, and you'd be like, oh god, that is just so useful.
Excellent, because so many of the lenses are coming out with this. Obviously, the new red set from the Red Primes from Cook are coming out. They're all going to have it. There's some fantastic new zooms from Cook coming out, which are just
all the normal,
awesome stuff.
All the normal Cooks have it. You know, I mean, my 70 has it. It's not a Red thing. It's Red playing well with others, and I just totally applaud them for that.
Yeah, oh, that's good. Was this meant to be there the whole time, and it just hasn't been quite facilitated yet?
It was in the design, and then this shorting problem meant that they removed it. And it's like, if you had a choice to the general cinematography community of, do you want audio on board embedded to save having to sync rushes, or Mike Seymour can get some funky data that he wants later in post-production. I'm pretty sure I know which way the balance is going to tip, whereas now we're saying, you know what, we'll get this, won't cost us anything, won't bug anyone, and it without, you know, kind of a penalty, but also without having to just, you know, spend a lot of time fussing on set. I think the less we can fuss, yeah, really, it's just not good, and doesn't work well for the actor being able to do the performance, because it's just interrupting their space.
It shits me. Sound guys are the worst. The worst. Old women
well,
on set.
Well, no, hang on a sec.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, no, I just think that, I mean, you know, basically sound is forgotten a lot, and it's, and we say it's 50% of the movie, but I mean, you just have to look at a film, WALL-E, right? Where, like, there's no dialogue for the first part of the film. It's all in sound design. And there are a whole lot of other films like that that you just, if you take away the sound, like, it's just so key. And yet,
sure.
And yet, you know,
it's but just... But they don't quite understand how much of that is done, how much I'm going to do later. Do I really need to do sync sound on someone putting a pack down, you know? Time and time again, they just... Old women will just sort of, oh, sorry, and it's changing, stopping every 5 minutes.
Not that there's anything wrong, just for the record, not there's anything wrong with old women, because women are terrific, and
I don't
old
wanna,
ones
I'm happy to offend sound people, but I don't want to offend old women.
You don't want to offend old women? We're happy to offend the sound department. But, okay, I mean, I get what you're saying
fussing,
to a certain
we don't
point,
like fussing.
But then by the same token, you know, there are a few things that we don't do much for sound. I mean, one thing is just letting sound bloody well hear what all the dialogue's going to be and have a good run through so they know where they're going before they actually do the record.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's pretty messy in post. I guess there are a lot of sound tools to fix stuff up, but I don't know. I feel sound gets pretty...
It does, because it's so easy a lot easier to fix it up later than it is to sit and wait and fanny around while someone changes a battery pack for the fifth time that day on someone who's not even on screen.
I will say this, when you work with good sound guys, and so you've got your own like headset so you can monitor the audio really well no matter where you are, and they're happily patching stuff in and out and unobtrusive, I mean, they're worth their weight in gold.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep, no.
And maybe it's because they're not loved, they're a bit bitter. Anyway, so let's keep going. So we're still in the news and we're rambling a little bit. Well, I think it's all relevant.
Okay. Rambling, exactly.
So there's a couple of other things that were posted that are kind of interest, and we're gonna break now from our normal rule of thumb, which is to be very focused on stuff that's actually in production, because some of the stuff we want to discuss now is Scarlett and Epic related, and we don't normally do that because we don't want to be accused of just, you know, fanning the flames of. There's some guy on today on Scarlett User, and I don't really look, posted a thing about how he was going to get his exam results. It had nothing to do with cinematography, nothing to do with cameras. I'm like, do you not know anyone else? Do you have no friends?
Just there's not much else to talk about on those boards, because it's talking about a camera that doesn't actually exist, which is why we sort of held back. But there's been a couple of awesome renders come out for the Epic, and the Scarlett was just sort of... just. These last few just make it seem tantalizingly closer.
So to try and maintain our subtle attempt at looking professional, let's discuss these, not from a point of, ooh, doesn't it look cute, but in the light of, why do you think these new renderings look professional, and what about this makes you feel like they're listening? Because you actually said to me, your first remarks were something along the lines of... somebody must have been poached from somewhere because they're really coming up with some professional design. And so I guess my question to you, what makes you say that?
Well, not that the red one isn't sort of pro, because obviously it is, but it just the way, just the whole layout of the camera now, of these, I'm talking about the two Epic renders that have showed up today. Again, we'll put links to these in the show notes. But all the ports look really labeled. Everything looks really smooth and protected. All the ports that are meant to go back away from the lens are pointing backwards. All the ports that are meant to go forward are pointing forward. All the plugs basically. Obviously, what you're all about is protecting these things from being ripped out. If things are being, the number one sort of thing is video out. You know, HD, SDI, or any of the video plugs are so easy to be just ripped out.
So let me ask you this: why wouldn't you want those side plugs on the Epic to actually be either 45 or vertically pointed down, because it's one of the criticisms I heard is not only that they were coming out sideways from the red one, but they were open to the elements, sand, rain in particular.
Right.
I guess you try not to rain on your camera, but you know what I mean? Like a lot of people normally have them angled down so that...
There's a lot of stuff. This looks very sort of like a, you know, an Arri or a Panavision to me, the way these are laid out. I mean, basically, not too much stuff is pointing... Not too much stuff is really pointing down.
Okay.
I mean, if you've got elements, pretty much you sort of try and...
Trying to protect them. I guess you're not going to be going you know, rowboat with it. Okay, so
it's just great. Full-size BNCs, full-size XLRs. The audio stuff pointing backwards, the viewfinder and the LCD ports are all pointing forward beautifully. Everything is really labeled really well. It just looks, it's looking really fantastic.
You quite like the shoulder mount as well.
Yeah,
right?
The shoulder mount looks fantastic. It's really sort of curved for sitting on your shoulder. If you go and look at the side of a 435 or any sort of motion picture camera that's used to being handheld, they'll really actually look at the ergonomics of the way the thing's going to sit on your shoulder and sort of make it a bit thinner at the back so it can sit there. It looks, that's really
now by,
awesome.
By way of companion, the Scarlett has a kick-ass side handle-y thingy. Want to talk to us about that?
Yeah, the, what's it called? I think it's called the Smart Handle or something.
Is it?
I mean, obviously these things are, you know, a way off from being in production, but there's a new sort of what looks like it's a quick to attach smart handle which sit on the side and basically makes the Scarlett look like a big full frame DSLR.
Certainly does.
It just
begs the question: why couldn't you use it as such?
Well, exactly. I guess you can shoot like whatever it is, 5 megapixel at 25 frames a second, and I think this is my next stills camera.
Is it only 5 megapixels? I guess it is.
Well, what's 3? I don't know if 3K. You probably can tell me what 3K is.
Well, I mean, the red one is effectively 12 megapixels, right? I can do the maths. But, would happily take this. Point blank, I'm going to take this as my one camera. And I will take this anywhere I go.
Yeah.
And this will be the camera that hopefully, if we can get it so we don't need to have rods on it and stuff. So there's like, you know, like a portable kind of config. Because, I mean, obviously you could rig it up with, you know, a whole lot of things like lens hoods and, but if there's some way of, you know, not having to go to the trouble, I mean, I guess one critical aspect on that would be having some sort of internal neutral density filter capability to, because if we don't have that, then it becomes a mockery in terms of its portability. But let's assume that we do have some way of controlling that, then man, I would just take this area and
I would not take
my 5D.
Yeah, absolutely. I would, if I'd even take this for recce, I'd take it on set as my director's viewfinder, because I can essentially do 16:9 or whatever I want to do, 2-3-5 framings, and show everybody who's wandering around the set with me over my shoulder. I want to go from here and I want to go from here, and this is the framing. I'm not going to quite get the impression of what the depth is, but I would take this for recce. I can, because obviously when I go and sort of shoot locations to show agency and show this is where I want to go, this is the living room I want to shoot at, or the exterior, I'll have to then put them all into iPhoto and crop them all to 16:9, and so this is really gonna show. I'll be able to wander around, and obviously I'm all in bathrooms shoving cameras up into the corners of bathrooms to simulate, you know, this is where I could get my camera, and just try and guessing and firing off 20 shots and hoping one of them's level. This would be great. Flip the monitor out, shove it above your head and fire off an exact shot.
Showing there is a flip out monitory.
Oh yeah, there's a flip out monitor. Yeah, it's got a flip out LCD.
Has it?
Yeah,
didn't have an NAB,
didn't it? No, it didn't.
When did it have a flip-out LCD? I missed that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely...
I've been very very non-Scarlet engaged because I know
see, you've already got a red.
Yeah, I mean,
this
I'm going to...
be my first
Don't
one.
Get me wrong, I'm going to friggin' get a bunch of these, right?
I think
last time we asked
a
around
bunch
the office...
plus one, thanks, Mike.
Yeah, including yours, I think we're up to 17 that we wanted in just for the office. But, I mean, and of course that poses actual issues about how Red's going to scale production for doing them, but
yeah, because whatever they think, you know, at the moment, I'm actually amazed there's only really about, I think they're up to about 4,900 or something orders. I'm actually amazed it's not five times that. I guess once the post-production thing gets sorted out, it'll be 10 times that.
Well, okay, well, so now I'm really showing where, oh god, I've been in America for 2 weeks. There's an order queue for Scarlets?
No, 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 sorry. I'm talking about red ones.
Oh, sorry. Frick. I was thinking, bloody hell, did I miss that
piece of reason?
I was thinking, I mean, I thought I'd prepared for today, but I completely missed that there was an order count. I mean, I was a bit speechless.
You missed it, and there
you were like, it's up to 5,000, and I was like, what?
You'll get your camera in 2018.
Yeah.
No, I was thinking, I was talking about red
I'm
one.
No, I beg your pardon. Yeah. I'm totally there.
If it takes, I think, whatever order numbers they've got for Red One, it's going to be, 10 times that for Scarlet, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of interesting aspects to the Scarlet. One of the things I found interesting, and just relating it to being at SIDGRAPH, which was the, obviously scientific end of the CG market, but they have a lot of stuff now. It's a whole developing area in terms of computational photography, which I think is fascinating. And as a research area, this is the stuff that a few years from now will end up in cameras. So this is way off the reservation in terms of even what Red has. But, we might see it, literally 4 or 5 years from now.
What's computational photography?
It's a whole lot of stuff. It's determining a lot of things. I'm not gonna get into a heavy thing about it now, but like literally I'd bust apart lenses, put in special kind of blocks that cause defocusing things. And from that, they can produce complex depth maps. It's ways of doing things like working out if you could build a camera that would have in post a fully adjustable depth of field in terms of actual focus. So you'd take a shot and then later you'd say, well, I'd actually like it to look like this and wind in the depth of focus in post.
Wow.
There's a lot of stuff interesting built off pinhole cameras. Obviously, pinhole cameras are infinite depth of field, but could you do, a whole lot of interesting stuff to work out stuff from where you are? This sort of maths I find fascinating. It's very early days. Like often a prototype will be working and it'll work like 128 by 128 pixels or something. But, this is like stuff doesn't come out of nowhere, right? Like it's not like new inventions come from thin air. And so it's a body of research that goes like this that then causes somebody to adopt it, take it and move it in. So, but I guess my point in saying this is I was talking to a few people about the Scarlet and, they were sort of saying, well, if it didn't have a rolling shutter, we'd buy, hundreds of them for doing what we want to do. But a lot of them had issues because of needs for, accurate measurement that didn't involve the rolling shutter.
But I guess it's there. I have seen some artifacts of it. But man, I think I've shot about three commercials on the Red since I saw you even last. I've never seen any of this or noticed any of these rolling shutter artifacts. I guess you've got to be shooting the right kind of footage.
Yeah. I mean, if you are shooting stuff that is high speed or very precise, very short exposure times, and certainly with flash photography, and there are ways of getting at it. I don't say it's a problem. It mainly affects us in terms of 3D tracking because, straights bend. And I actually produced a video for FXPHD where we sort of deliberately showed horrendous stuff that, what it would be like if it wasn't rolling shutter and what it was. But when somebody comes up to me in the street and says, is rolling shutter a problem for you doing the work you do? And the answer is no.
The answer is, sorry, who are you?
So I'm just saying, I think the camera's going to be hugely successful for a whole variety of applications. I don't necessarily agree with the premise that it's soccer mums.
No.
I think that's, just a bit naive. Unless your soccer mum just happens to be a part-time DOP soccer mum.
I just think this is an awesome onset and pre-production tool, and every DOP is going to want to have one
every visual effects supervisor want one too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's just applications in our field. I think this is a outstanding crash cam, doco cam, second unit cam, backup cam for if you're off, in the wilds of Africa, don't necessarily take a whole Red One spare body pack, for $3,000 you've got lens and everything and standing by in the kit just as an emergency.
Yeah, I think the other one that it's going to be hugely popular in is the stereoscopic market. By no means is stereoscopic going to be the only market we deal in, but being able to have small 3K cameras that can get close together, I think that'll be really, really interesting.
Oh, awesome, that can zoom together.
Yes, if there's a calibrated zoomer, we understand there will be, so that it is quite accurate, then you'll be able to build stereoscopic rigs really, really cheaply, and that'll really open that up. And somebody, I'm sure, like Element Technica or PS, would come up with a Red Scarlet stereo rig within weeks of the Scarlets being out and about.
It's some very interesting times coming up.
Yeah, and hopefully NAB will be the place that we sort of see them and in action. We tend to get, if at IBC they show any footage from the new sensors, then that would pretty much confirm that there'll be a tech, you know, like a ship in 90 days kind of showing at NAB. But yeah. Exactly when they'll, you know, I mean, who knows, we just don't know. But perhaps the trick will be to be really nice to our friends at Red and get invited over to the Red Ranch when we're at NAB next year.
It's because that's in Vegas.
Yes.
Hopefully they'll be built by then.
Hey, just completely to do with nothing, I just killed myself laughing when I saw the IC4K phone app thing that you pinged me about.
Yeah, someone, actually, I thanks to the Twitterverse, awesome, really awesome little iPhone app, which has applications beyond just Red.
Well, it's free as well.
It is free, but I entirely recommend, this is so worth donating. If you go to the website, obviously you can download it straight to your iPhone now, but if you go to ICISEE4K.com,
yep.
There is a little button there to donate to PayPal, which I think is well worth it. The guy should actually be charging money for this. I think it's brilliant.
Well, now, interestingly, there are quite a lot of depth of field calculators out there, and I was thinking, yeah, well, you know, somebody's bound to have done it. What I thought was really cute with this is actually having both a data calculator and a maximum frame rate calculator. So if somebody says to you, if we went off a 16 gig CF card at 2:1 on, I don't know, quality 28, what was the maximum frame rate we could get again? And it's like, and before you answer that question, how does that compare if I went on for a Red drive at 4K at 16:9 on 36?
This is excellent for me, so I can look like I know my shit. And I could say, okay, put me on, if we're on the Red drive, I want to go 16:9, 4K, and I want to go 29.97 or whatever. And also excellent for camera assistants to be able to sort of look like they know what they're talking about as well. But so it's depth of field. It's got like five pages on it. It's got depth of field, field of view. It's got an excellent lens sort of.
Well, our field of view being very important as we jump from 4K to 3 to 2K and the new 4K, this hasn't got it yet, but
that's true.
The 4K HD.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you're setting up at the back of a studio and you want to know how big a green screen to build or whatever, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't really use field of view calculators, but theoretically, you'll know how big your field of view is, whether you're on 35 though, or 3K.
People have asked me that. They've said if I was on a, you know, 100mm lens and I went to, you know, 2K, you know, what's that going to look like in terms of field of view? And that's sort of easier to answer than 3K, and certainly easier to answer than when things start getting a bit more obtuse in terms of, you know, the numbers that are being used.
Yeah, it is good to know what it's going to do to your image. I did a shot. And I'll sort of cover that later. I did this shot, which is my first job on Build 16, and I was just utterly blown away with how it looked.
Actually, we should put the little silly eye phone aside for one second, yep, and talk about your Build 16 experiences, because right. I don't know why I didn't do that first, because that was a phenomenal revelation, and your summary of that was just extraordinary.
It was a one-shot, it was a one-shot deal. We did a couple of commercials just for a charity, and I mean, I did have a fantastic DOP, Steve Winden, who's done like Tokyo Drift, and
Steve Winden is excellent.
The Postman, tons of Deep Blue Sea, tons of fantastic films, and Deep Blue Sea. So it did look great, but theoretically, I was actually going off to do another job, and I didn't really want to leave the grading to agency or others that might sort of screw it up. So actually, we imported the raw R3D file straight in, that made a DPX, put it straight into the online, and it just looked fantastic. Exposure was bang on. It was a one shot take where the guy was moving from an office up a walkway, and he was going through about three or four different parts of a room and crossing through foreground and ending up in a sort of portrait close up thing, and it was mind blowing. I just thought this looks so much like. It looks much more like film. Anecdotally, I've no idea what really... I mean, I know we discussed at length what Build 16 does, but to me, it looks all the more like film now. I guess, anecdotally, I guess it looks like there's something in the highlights, the way they've rolled off the highlights, that it doesn't get really crushy and tapey at the top end. I don't know whether that's camera, whether that's processing, whether that's red space. But it just, when it blows out, it looks like film blowing out. It doesn't, because that's always been the number one, well, the two things obviously that say tape to me, three things that say tape to me would be shutter speed, depth of field, and how the highlights blow out. And
I'd say, yeah, definitely
killed that.
Yeah.
I think.
The four things, progressive, interlacing.
Yes, true.
Spanish Inquisition jokes notwithstanding.
Aqueducts.
Yeah, I've got to say, yeah, once you get the depth of field and stuff, and the other thing was that smeariness that you tended to get, which was related to the shutter. It wasn't just that the shutter was not 1/48, but, you know, we got like, a, you know, 950, you get this kind of smeariness on action.
I thought that was just people going with 60th or going with longer than 50th of a second. Yeah. Sort of stuff.
I mean, I noticed it in Get Smart, actually, which was shot on the Genesis. Yeah. So I could pick those shots and later reading about it. But I totally agree with you. It's an astounding build. And I was kind of embarrassed because I was testing 16 back in at alpha stage. And they were like, so what do you think of like the look? And I'm like, it looks really good. And they're like, and so...
Why?
And I was like, it just does. So that look, it looks good. What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't want to be like a completely inarticulate, non-technical type, but this looks good.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I just did something. The job I was going on to was extremely boring job, and I won't be posting that. But it was just outdoors, and the sun was going up and down like a bride's nightie. It was just all over the shop. Yet if it was blown out, yet it was the highlights were. It was all there. We just went into. Had a look at the actual raw file in Mancini, and it just changed the ASA and bang, it was just looked like
Steve Windon actually film. Did The Patriot, which was that Mel Gibson film with which was really good. But you know, he's just finished shooting on Pacific, which is the Band of Brothers Australian version.
Yeah, over a year shooting that film.
God, so he's been out. He's been out.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
But you know, if ever there was a motherhood statement in cinematography or just generally, I guess, in production, it's get good lens, get a DOP that can light. Do you know what I mean? Like, those were the two things that you just wanted. More than life itself, a good piece of glass, because if you had, you know, crappy lenses, it's bad.
Yeah.
And somebody that can light. If you got those two things and then you now have something like Build 16, then there's just no problems. It's just it, you know?
Yeah.
I've seen some
apart
interesting...
from the whole Avid thing, but anyway...
No, well, even so, like, that's not an image problem. That's like a workflow problem.
Sure.
Like, if you're talking about your work looking good.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a lighting DOP that can obviously light. Because, I mean, I've seen stuff shot on red. It looks really appalling.
Mm.
Speaking of which, in the Adobe test of the new plugin for the R3D, and you just go, okay, so that is just like really bad lighting, bad cinematography. Yeah, but if
you've got to try really bad, really hard to sort of make it look bad. I sent you a link today just for that red footage, just shot on 2K, 120 frames. It was just something
on skateboarding,
something on Vimeo. Again, I'll put the link in the show notes. But it was just some guys in France, just at 120 frames, natural light, just slow mo guys doing skateboard tricks down some stairs of a national monument, smashing up the. Smashing up the beautiful stuff. Even that looked fantastic. You know, you've really got to try hard to make this stuff look bad, I think.
We're doing some stuff to do with the fluid dynamics in FXPHD, and so we're going to start shooting now during September stuff in 120 frames a second for cloud tanks and that's another... I'm sorry to name drop, but I'm sitting interviewing Scott Squires for a thing for PhD, like we're doing this series. And he's like, and so then I'm on the set of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and we're pouring cream in the coffee, and it goes, that looks like a cloud. Go away, Scott, and work out how to film that. And so then we went away and invented cloud tanks. And then we came up with, like, and I was like, I'm just, you know, I'm trying not to, like, be, like, fanboy
sorry,
spluttering.
Can we back up a little bit?
Whoa, just the bit where you invented cloud tanks? Sorry, the bit about Close Encounters? Yeah. But anyway.
Love cloud tanks.
Anyway, my point is that you do need to shoot it well. But let's segue, as we've sort of alluded to then, into this video that's been put out by Adobe, which is really exciting for so many members of the post-production community. It's seeing the R3D files being opened in natively in things like After Effects, Encore, Premiere. The video is available, obviously. We'll give you the link, but it's interesting in a couple of aspects, and I want to go past some of the obvious. I mean, of course we want it to work in terms of opening up in the R3Ds, but and that in of itself looks a lot like what we do with Final Cut in terms of just dragging the QuickTimes in, but they're actually dragging in the R3Ds and keying and working with those directly. It was kind of interesting, though, I just noted in watching the video that, I don't want to be sort of nasty or anything, but to get the real-time playback on the MacBook in this beta stage, they're actually, I don't know if you noticed this, they were using the R3Ds at 1/8 res, so it was basically they were doing 512 by whatever it is, 288, 16 by 9 to get it to render. So they were, that was their kind of interactive working thing, and then they were re-rendering it in higher res later.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I mean, it was just a demo for a video, right?
Look, the main thing is it's drag and drop and...
I think the main thing is that they had no audio at this stage, and obviously I think it's absolutely critical to have the audio. I think that would be sensationally important. But it's not just Adobe that are doing this. There's a whole actual ton of companies that are developing, especially in the grading area. The guys that are doing the grading systems are really responding, because that's what we really want, isn't it?
Now, that was one, I think that was one of the few Red-related. There wasn't much, as you said, from SIGGRAPH. Red-related announcements, I think, was Baselite, and those guys are having about to introduce R3D native.
Yeah, because what we really wanted to be able to do is take the R3D files in to an environment where we can grade from the R3Ds, because, quite frankly, it's a bit of an ask, because you have to make some equipment... commitments to your workflow if you want to go and shove stuff into a particular DPX file, because that's requiring that you commit to a, you know, not only a DPX file format, but the color space that goes in. And SpeedGrade XR is what I was trying to look for. SpeedGrade XR is got the red code support, which is good. And I think we're going to see that from a whole bunch of other equipment manufacturers, and I know a whole ton of them are looking at it, because, quite frankly, a whole ton of them keep on phoning me up and emailing me asking for R3D footage.
Really?
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, in fact, I was, yeah.
What am I? The R3D shop.
Well, because we shoot a lot of material that isn't proprietary.
Sure.
And so...
Show at trade shows.
We are really happy to do it. So we're working with the guys at Pixel Farm, it's no secret, over making sure that, not a financial arrangement, we're just giving them stuff to try and get their stereoscopic workflow sorted, and also their R3D workflow in terms of the metadata that we were talking about earlier. So, you know, Pixel Farm reads that metadata, and so making sure that they can read that and stuff, and we're totally happy to do that. And they're not the only equipment manufacturers. There's several others that we are happily giving stuff to. So I think it's going to be one of the biggest changes that we see come NAB timeframe, is everybody having these workflows. But what it's going to come down to is whether a decode is a decode is a decode. That didn't rhyme very well, but you know what I mean? Like, whether decoding the R3Ds is the same in various apps. Will it be that the decoding, matrixing and work that's done by companies that are reading those R3Ds is equivalent across different equipment manufacturers? And sure enough, somebody is going to come out with a crappy R3D reader, and then they're going to keep complaining about the R3D files. And
I mean, the whole idea should be that you're seeing the real thing, you're not seeing some kind of workaround that it'll open the files, but you're not really quite seeing the files, you're just seeing them enough to be able to cut them or whatever.
Well, look at the difference between raw files on a stills camera, right? I mean, pretty much you're talking about a Aperture, Lightroom, Photoshop, and maybe the Bridge as the only places that I would ever decode my RAW files with the, say, a Canon RAW encode of my stills.
Mm.
But I could imagine happily having After Effects, Flame, Avid, Final Cut, you know, the list goes on of companies that will be doing the decoding of the R3Ds. And, you know, that's before we even hit the 3D apps wanting to access metadata for lenses, and obviously all of the color grading boxes wanting to access it to do grades. So I think what the only thing we'll be able to do is just, you know, maybe build up a set of tests and then try and see if we can get some equivalence going. Maybe that's something we should set as ourselves as a kind of an exercise of a suite of tests for the decodes, and making sure that they're not only up to scratch but up to the latest of what's going on with Red. And I think over time that's going to become a bit of an area of confusion as to, because you know, quite frankly, I've been saying this for a while, it matters who does your decode. It's not, you know, like doing the transfer, you just shouldn't get your producer to do it on a laptop.
Yeah, it's just because you can doesn't mean... Just because you can doesn't mean you should. Yeah.
So, Jace, do we have anyone in the hot chair for you to talk to this week in by way of interviews and or Red Room? Because clearly we've had a lot of interest with people, you know, the stories that we've done and the fact that we've been sitting and talking to people around the world has been pretty interesting, actually. And I think, quite frankly, it's one of the parts that I enjoy about what we do with Red Centre is that we're getting these hands-on comments from people from all over the world. And you've done a startlingly good job. And am I right in saying that you've actually gone to New York? Or via Skype?
Canada.
Canada? Okay, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. We're speaking to Dylan McLeod, who's a DP in Canada. I first sort of bumped into Monred user because he had just come back from doing like 6 weeks DOCA around the world, wilds of Africa, you name it, which I thought was pretty ambitious on a camera, which sometimes doesn't fails to proceed. He had a lot of interesting stuff to say about traveling around the world and his experiences of doing a doco, essentially, on the Red One. So
now he has what Red One 1200 no 1300.
Yep, 1297 or something.
Right,
and he is he's a great presence on the website, and he's a great fund of information. And
so, can I just apologize, you know, in advance for confusing anything to do with Canada with anything to do with North America. Dylan, I just apologize humbly and unreservedly.
Yes, Canadians and Americans.
Let's cross that interview now.
Okay. Okay, I'm joined by Dylan McLeod, DP from Ontario, Canada. Hey, Dylan.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
Good, thanks for joining me. Glad you could spare the time. You're a busy man.
Yeah, pretty busy. Yeah, it's been good, especially with my new Red camera. It's great.
So, what Red number did you get, and what got you buying it?
I've got Red number 1297. I got it back in April, and I think I was kind of on the sidelines a little bit, watching you know, what was going on with development. But I think pretty much since I started shooting. Since HD has become more prevalent, I've always kind of been looking for an alternative to it, because I'm still not quite happy with HD. I come from a heavy film background, and with HD, I always found renting a Pro 35 adapter, always trying to find that kind of film,
the film look.
That film book, yeah.
Yeah.
And the Red just seemed to kind of, sort of fit the bill. Of course, it's not a replacement for film, but it certainly kind of does a lot more than HD to get you closer to film.
So your role with it is DP?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. What other gear did you get when you bought it?
I pretty much got a full package. I wanted to at least have something I could, you know, take in my backyard and test with. So I got one of the Red 18-50 zooms. I've got an O'Connor 1030 HDS head, Vokus matte box, full set of filters. So just a good basic shooting package. But truth is, I would never use the 18-50 on a shoot. I'm always going to, want to rent Cooks or, Master Prime, something like that. But the 18-50 was just for me to have something to use to test with.
Right. Now, you've just come back from a pretty massive shoot with this thing. 6 weeks around the world on a doco.
That's correct. Yeah, it was quite an exciting shoot, actually.
Now, I reckon this camera will be fantastic for docos, actually. I mean, obviously, it's more maybe, I suppose, designed for the indie film thing, but I think it'd be a fantastic doco camera. How did it go?
It went really well. I mean, I was lucky to have, my assistant that I've used for many years, Brent J. Craig, with me, who has also been really sort of enthusiastic about learning the Red camera inside out, and his background is as much, as a computer programmer as it is as a first AC, an excellent focus puller. So he had the really right combination of skills to use this camera. And then when he actually said he'd come on the road for 6 weeks, it was even more of a bonus. Because really, I mean, as you know, the workflow, all of that, especially 3-4 months ago, for us, it was all very new. And there was a lot of stuff we had to figure out, especially, as most people know, I mean, data backup, we took 30 flights in 45 days. I mean, how do you deal with managing data? it was a lot to think about, and so I was glad to have him with me. But yeah, I mean, I think it definitely is a good documentary camera. I think it is. You still have to think of it more as a film camera. It's not an ENG style, you know, throw it on your shoulder and run and gun. Yeah. But it's definitely easier than film.
So what did you take with you? Obviously, you probably traveled lighter than you normally would.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I do mostly commercial work, like television commercials. So for me, it was a bit of a challenge to kind of, get my head around, aside from camera, just a really limited grip and lighting package.
Yeah, choosing what you want for 6 weeks today.
Today, and knowing that it's, I literally have one grip. No lighting crew, one camera assistant. I'm going to be carrying the cases. I don't have, PAs doing that for me. So, and pretty much because of our schedule, we had to basically take all the gear as additional gear. We didn't have a shipping company at all, kind of shipping. So we would land at the airport, and we'd wait for 32 cases to come rolling out the luggage rack and figure out how we're going to get them to our location. And so it was pretty intense. I mean, so that definitely had a an impact on what we packed. But that said, I mean, we didn't compromise at all in the lens package. The director, we had a long talk about how we wanted to approach things, and we didn't compromise on lens package and sort of camera support. We did bring an extra body with us because obviously, we were a little concerned being stuck out in the middle of the Indonesian forest with a red camera that goes down.
You did have an extra body with you, you said.
That's right, an extra body, yeah.
Yes, very wise, because I did wonder about reliability. I wasn't sure how you'd go with that.
Yeah, I mean, that said, we had no issues. We had one time the camera overheated. We were in Chile, and we were shooting in a mine site in the desert, and there was a lot of dust, and we had to do a car mount shot, so we wrapped the camera, and it, lesson learned, first time, last time we'll do it, is we wrapped the fan at the bottom as well, so the camera overheated.
Right.
It took about five minutes to cool it down. And again, smart thinking on my first assistant's behalf, he took his air can, turned it upside down so you get the kind of cold air coming out of it.
Freon, yeah.
Exactly, and just sprayed the top of the body to cool it down, and it took about 5 minutes. I mean, we had a very important kind of person we were with us that we were doing the car mount shot with, so it was, I think, the only time I've ever cursed the red camera. But that was the only time we ever had a problem, and that was our fault. So
it was your fault. Right, well, that's brilliant. So you didn't really, so I guess you were pulling the second camera out actually as B-cam rather than sort of leaving it as a backup, maybe.
Exactly. That only happened once, again, because we were such a limited crew. We did some aerial work in Australia, actually. And while we were up doing the aerials for 2-3 hours, my assistant took the other body out and did some just some nature shots, basically, with the 300 mil.
It would have still been a fair amount of gear. You didn't pluck the number 32 of the number of cases out of the air. It sounds like it's imprinted in your DNA for counting that number of cases.
Yeah, that was the only we had a sound guy from Los Angeles that joined us, and so that was the only snag in the magic number of anytime we showed up at an airport, is when he joined us the number would change by one, and that actually bit us in the ass once. Actually, on our last location, it was Ghana in Africa. And we landed in the airport after, I can't remember how long the flight was, and we were having some difficulty finding our personal bags, the sound guy and myself. So we were like scanning the luggage rack, and finally got our luggage, bolted out the door after everybody else. I just quickly said, "Do we have all our cases?" And I can't remember what the number was at that point. I think Brent said, my assistant said, "Oh yeah, 32. We got 32." We showed up location the next morning, and Brent says to me, "Where are the filters?" And I said, "What do you mean, where are the filters?" And he said, "I can't see them anywhere." I said, "But we have 32 cases." And we went go back and forth, and then our line producer / assistant director said 33, and we realized, uh-oh, and that was because we had the additional sound case. That was a bit of a challenge, but...
So take me through the doco itself. You mentioned that this is a bit of an experimentation in doing virtually, or trying to look towards IMAX kind of resolution.
Yeah, I mean, I should. So basically, the brief history is the director, John Milne, works at Science North, which is a science center in northern Ontario. They produce and exhibit their own large format IMAX films. And then they also have a distribution network where they, obviously distribute the films to other science centers around the world. He's worked in the large format division for a while. He's never directed a large format film, and his executive producer, who does IMAX, directs and produces IMAX films, asked John to explore the idea of doing this this next film digitally. It was a lower budget than what they normally would have for an IMAX film. And initially, John had approached me about doing this and had suggested using an F900 and said they wanted to look towards large format digital. And I kind of was a little concerned because I said large format and a Sony F900 didn't quite match in my mind. I suggested that if the timing worked and the camera seemed, sort of roadworthy, that we explore doing it with the Red. And once I kind of pointed him in the right direction to kind of see what the camera was all about, he was all over it. Originally, we explored doing a full 4K workflow, but it looks like it looks like Technicolor is going to end up doing a lot of the post work for us, with some help of Off Hollywood in New York to do some of the DPX files for us. But we're delivering 2K, and the hope is that down the line, once they are actually able to afford a 4K projector, they would actually do a 4K version as well.
Fantastic. So it's not actually going to be delivered to IMAX, but we know they've got the resolution in the can for later if need be.
Exactly. And I mean, I should kind of preface it by saying, I mean, they have an IMAX division. This is not being produced as part of the IMAX division. So they're basically just kind of looking to us and saying, like, hey, so what's going on with digital? And, although we don't have the budget to do this next film full on IMAX, what can you offer, digital that could, be something close? Because I do know, since we finished shooting, I have heard that IMAX has their own proprietary system underway. So, I mean, I don't think necessarily Red is going to be able to infiltrate that market because they've got their own thing up their sleeve.
But I mean, it's interesting anyway. It's an interesting test case for them to look at.
Absolutely. And that's what excited me about it. I thought, wow. And, like even just looking at the images on the road as we were going and having seen some of the IMAX work that's been done, we definitely, beyond just resolution, we approached it, as you would an IMAX, like a large format kind of film. I mean, a lot of the discussions we would have on set are like, oh, wow, no, we're not tight enough. And I would say, well, we got to remember, I mean, picture yourself sitting, 20 rows back and you want to look left and right. You don't want to just be staring at this big head in the center of the screen. It was really a different, for all of us, just a different way of learning how to compose, how to do camera movement, all of that. So it was, not just from the Red standpoint, but also just, from thinking large format, that was a whole other way of approaching it as well.
So you mentioned shooting 4K. How did you handle 6 weeks of data on the road?
We brought two large drives with us, and then we had a series of smaller drives that we would ship home. So basically, end of each day, my camera assistant again, who took on the role of data management, we would finish our.
I don't think he got much sleep.
Well, none of us did actually, because it was kind of a shared experience. And I'll go through the whole workflow, but you'll see. I mean, I had my share of lab work to do as well. But basically, we'd end the day, go back to the hotel, and Brent would start downloading footage. The first couple days, obviously, we were pretty terrified. So we made sure that we downloaded everything, and we actually would go through each shot and at least watch some of it in motion, low res, just to see the full motion, make sure there were no issues. And then, so on top of this, like basically what we did was we had somebody back in Toronto, a guy named Chris Parker, who works for a company called Bling Video, doing all of our transcoding. The editor's workflow is Final Cut Pro, which made it a little easier for us. What Chris and I worked out before we left was that I was going to put the footage into Red Alert, time my own dailies, send him, can't remember the extension now, RLX files, I think are the file attachments in Red Alert, the look files. And I would basically save a whole series of RLX files, zip them up and email them to him, and we would ship a drive home. And so while we were on the road, he was getting footage basically applying my look. And then, yeah, don't quote me on this part of the workflow because I'm a little foggy on it, but I think he was then using Log and Transfer to do the audio and to deliver to the editor for editing and Final Cut. So basically the dailies had a look that I had created on it, which was, you know, for me, the big bonus of this whole system and something I really wanted to make sure happened on this shoot especially.
As I say, it doesn't sound like everybody got much sleep, but by the time you finish shooting and then you get back to the hotel room and then you're doing your own lab work.
Exactly. Over a beer or two, of course. I keep telling people it was both a blessing and a curse. I mean, it was great to have that control, but it was also, you know, we do 14-hour days and then come home and do another 2-3 hours of work. It was a lot of work, but it was definitely exciting. It's fun kind of being involved in something that's just kind of, you know, being formed like this. So
I bet you got some fantastic pictures. Sounds like you went to some pretty amazing places.
Yeah, the locations were unbelievable. I mean, we didn't really talk much about the content of the film, but it's essentially a you know, not unlike an IMAX film where you've got sort of an educational component. As well as a sort of emphasis on nice photography. This was a documentary on the mining industry. So, you know, the general idea was to kind of show that mining is something that is integral to all of our lives, and it's kind of gotten a bad rap over the years. So we were kind of we had a sort of different story in each location. That was dealing either with an environmental aspect of what a particular mine was doing or, you know, sort of a community aspect, how the mine has sort of helped a certain community out. So, you know, it was incredible. I mean, we went from, you know, being in helicopters 15,000 feet in the air to in Indonesia to, like, standing in a schoolroom in Ghana and Africa with like 30 kids staring at you, looking at this red camera going, you know, I'm sure any camera would look odd to them, but I think, you know, it was a pretty incredible experience. Yeah. So, I mean, the locations themselves provided, you know, just unbelievable opportunity for some amazing photography. So,
well, you've probably already now just in the one shoot shot more varied footage than many other people have done with their Red over dozens of shoots.
Well, that was, I mean, I we left for this shoot, I think about 3 weeks after I got my camera. So, I mean, the timing was just perfect. I mean, for me, I was really excited about Red. But my concern was, wow, like how long is it going to take the industry to kind of catch on to it and be excited about shooting with it? So to be able to go on a shoot like this, put it through its paces and shoot in pretty much any kind of condition. Now I've got an answer for any producer, any director who has a concern. It's like, oh, I don't know, can we take it into the rainforest? I say, yep, I've done it. Or, you know, like it's just nice to be able to have that, that kind of experience backing it. So
I'd love to see some of it. When's it coming out?
I believe, I'm not sure what the timeline is going to be for Science North to actually exhibit it at their location, but I'm sure that's going to happen. I would imagine early 2009. It'll probably have a run at the large format. I think they have a 2K projector there, so I think that'll be their initial release, will be a 2K projection of it in their theater. Probably not on the IMAX screen. I don't know how large an image they can get out of their 2K projector. I've been trying to talk them into, you know, looking at 4K and but I, again, as I said, they've got their own proprietary system kind of in the works. So, but then hopefully then it will make the rounds to other, as I said, they have a distribution network, I think worldwide with other science centers. So the hope is that this will ultimately, you know, get to shown at theaters and science centers around the world.
Well, I'm sure you'll cut together your own reel as well.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm pretty excited to do that. I think the director mentioned he was going to cut a trailer, so hopefully I'll have a trailer at least sooner than later that I'll put up on my website along with my reel.
Well, Red's looking for footage at the moment.
Oh, really?
So, yes, maybe start gathering that reel sooner rather than later.
Exactly, yeah.
So what's next for you then?
Next, I'm sort of back doing television commercials. There's a possible feature that I may be doing at the end of August that I, right now, they've preliminarily asked me for a camera order for 35 and HD, and I sent them 35 HD in Red in response. But and to be honest, I'm not even sure if I would want to do it if it was HD. I'm just I haven't done a lot of features, but the sort of, I think you kind of put yourself at a bit of a disadvantage in many respects shooting HD, and I'd feel comfortable doing it on Red, but or film, but I don't know if I'd want to do it if it shoots HD. It's crazy as that sounds.
No, it's interesting. It's interesting you've got that sort of new comfort factor there.
Yeah, well, as you said, I mean, like this trip in itself, kind of, it was a little trial by fire in the sense that I was forced to learn things I might not have learned otherwise, like what an RLX file is, and how to zip a bunch of looks together and email them to, like all that kind of stuff was out of necessity because I wanted to put the looks that I wanted on the footage. So, yeah, it's been
Yeah.
great.
Epic or staying with your Red One?
To be honest, I haven't done a lot of research on what the Epic's all about. From what I understand, it's 5K. I also understand they're going to be doing a sensor upgrade to the Red. So, I mean, if it's going to give, I get the sense the Epic is going to be more of a like a production camera. Not that the Red isn't, but yeah, so I'd like to see what it's all about before I dive in too deeply. Because obviously the nice thing about the Red is the price point. It was a fairly low risk investment in the sense that I knew that it could make its money back. And the Epic, I think, will be a little heavier investment. And I'd like to see how people, the industry in general responds to the workflow. A lot of, as we've been talking about, I mean, the Red is a whole new way of doing business, basically, from the lab
Yeah.
standpoint to post workflow, all of that. And I know editorial, and there's a lot of resistance from that end. So I'm kind of waiting to see how all that pans out before I get too much more heavily invested in it. So Epic, we'll see. Not sure yet.
Okay, so lastly, where can people find you?
My website is www.dylanmacleod, which is DylanMacLeod, .com, and that basically takes you to my agent's site, Sessler and Company. It takes you directly to my page, and you likely see my current commercial reel, but there will be some new stuff coming up there soon.
Well, look, thank you, Dylan. Thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
Sounds like you had a great trip, and sounds like there's more to come.
Yeah, and hopefully, as you said, I'll definitely post a trailer on the website once I get it for Breaking New Ground.
Right. Thanks for your time, Dylan. Cheers, mate.
Thank you.
And I love, it's just a really good real-world indication of the reliability of the cameras, isn't it? That
Yeah,
discussion.
and this is even, I think he was even on build 15 or something, and it's, to do 6 weeks around the world and not really have a, take a second body, but never have to actually use it. That's brilliant. But so hopefully, once that footage of his comes online, we'll put some links somewhere, or I'll, in future episodes, I'll post that or let everyone know where you can find it, because I did actually let him know that obviously they're looking for Red footage for IBC, so hopefully he'll try and get some of his footage to them for the screening room.
Now, there are a couple of things that we're holding over till next week. We normally do a gear chat on accessories and stuff, and we're just going to
Oh,
hold
yeah,
that over
do
to
that.
next week
Yep.
just because we're running short of time. And also, we wanted to discuss the Red Alert beta that's come out, the latest stuff that's been happening with Red Alert, and we'll all discuss that again next week. But I'm not kind of, I sort of come to the end of the show, but I must admit, Jason and I, with some group of friends, were actually out last night, so I'm a bit under the weather. It was a good concert, though.
It was excellent. Went to see Paul Weller from The Jam and Style Council. That was awesome.
Yes,
thank you
yes.
for that.
A Town Called Malice was just the greatest arrangement I've ever heard of that song, and it was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, totally, totally cool. Nothing to do with the Red cameras, but man, it was a great concert. Anyway, we wanted to just, as we've done before, flag how much we appreciate you guys sending in comments and emails and stuff, and also on Twitter. As you know, we use Twitter to try and discuss mainly just professional things, and not, we don't Twitter from from Paul Weller concerts, but we do try and gauge what's going on from that and from emails. And my Twitter is Mike Seymour, and yours is
twitter.com/Wingrove. Now, just quickly on Twitter, that I did a Twitter friend, Jeff Harrell. He's the editor on a little short film coming up in NYC, and he was looking for a DP who had Red camera. If there was somebody out there who's got a Red camera in New York, He's got a little sort of short film coming up featuring John Hodgman from who plays PC in the Apple ads and from The Daily Show.
I like that guy. He's funny.
He's fantastic. I mean, he happens to be just in it. He's not a major part of it. But regardless, it's if theoretically you don't do short films, you do other stuff, and this is a chance to do something different. Or if you're at all interested, I will put the link to Jeff's emails and Twitters in the show notes.
No asking for autographs. Well, that kind of wraps up 13. As now I'm back in the country and stuff, we're going to try and keep a pretty good schedule. You know, obviously, both Jason and I are heavily involved in production, so we can't always go. But I think it's fair to say that both Jason and I are pretty proud of the way the show's been going. Certainly, I found traveling around America, I was kind of stunned, actually, by the level of the listeners. Like, when I was approached by various people, I'd be at amazingly senior facilities and places, and people would come up and comment on the fact that they listen to this podcast. And we want to thank you for doing that, because
awesome.
It's totally, as we said before, we do it for you guys, and you contributing really makes a big difference to us. So keep firing the stuff off, keep sending stuff in, and we'll keep...
Plenty of subjects for shows have come from people just saying, hey, how about...
Totally. Yeah. And until next time, again, thanks for listening. And if you do have a story that you think would be relevant for our show, please contact Jason, because we don't want to just do mates of Jason and I. We want to do people like we've been getting, which are, people... Because actually, it's more interesting for us to talk to people that we don't know.
Yeah.
So, thanks so much. And until next time.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please email us red@fxguide.com. Copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC.